Welcome to the Harrison Faith Church Podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor Brian Herring. It's our prayer this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
You had a homework assignment last week, and that's to go and show hopefulness to a world of hopelessness. And so hopefully you did that. Today we're going to deal with something a little different. We're going to deal with choosing compassion when you feel contempt. And we're going to talk a little bit about what you do when you feel crowds coming and all that stuff. But before I dive in, let me give you a few things. Number one, this coming Sunday, you are going to be so blessed to hear Randy Bardwell speak. He's going to be continuing our series. It's actually the last week we're actually talking about the giving series. We're going to talk about missions and our goal setting service and setting goals for missions. And Randy is going to do that. He's well qualified after being a missionary to Honduras and being a pastor and serving. And not only that, he's had to be a missionary to Karen and help her, you know, learn Jesus. Oh, hey, Karen. Anyway, but we're glad to have him, and they're part of our church, and so they're going to do an excellent job. Right now, he's a current missionary at Home Depot, and there's quite the mission field around here, and so we want to do that. Also, to your list, I want to add a couple of prayer lists. And number one, Nathaniel Steele is definitely needed prayer. James has been texting me since last night, and Nathaniel has had some, hematoma. Resting in the side of his side, and they just haven't been able to get some of that cleared up. He's in a lot of pain. That's where James and Ann are tonight. They're with him. Yes. Okay. A family in Branson who's committed suicide needs prayer. Absolutely. So we want to add these to our list, and then I was talking with Tom Weatherly, different Tom, this is a Thurman, but Tom Weatherly, and I think we've all been concerned a little bit about all the stuff coming up with abortion across our nation, and I want to add that to our prayer list as well. So let's be praying about God's intervening in some of the situations for these late-term abortions. I appreciate it. Hopefully you've enjoyed getting these forms every week with the latest prayer request on it, with what's going on in our church, but I want you to pray for it all week. We get fresh needs every week, and we try to add to them as we see things come up, but definitely keep praying. Keep use it as part of your morning prayer time, your afternoon prayer. Do more than stick it on the refrigerator, you know, because these prayer needs are pretty serious, and they deserve more than just, Lord, as I'm getting this glass of milk, Lord, I just pray, you know, if I have cancer, I don't want you having that kind of prayer. I want you getting this. I want you getting on the floor of your bedroom, and I want you touching heaven for me. So make sure you take these home and pray over these needs on a regular basis. And I know on Sunday we have a lot of people gather those too. And then one more thing before we get on into the sermon. As you can see, we talked about we were going to paint Sunday. We started painting. Gray, if you don't like gray, I apologize. If you're colorblind, there's been no change. Everything looks the same. And if you're, if nothing else, but what it does, it will provide a little fresh coat of paint. Will make it look warmer in here. It'll make it look nicer. And we've had a team in here choosing the color. I have been sworn to secrecy about who those people are, because nobody wants to be known for choosing the carpet or the temperature in the room or the paint color. So this is a secret group that's been chosen of all ages. And anyway, I don't know if it's that big a secret, but I don't want to sell them out. So if they're really laughing real hard next to you, they might be part of that group. But anyway, so there we are. So we're going to go ahead and dive in to tonight's message. And what do you do when you feel frustrated and irritated in a situation? We all have different things that set us off. Sometimes it's hard to even see past crowds. When you go to Walmart and it is nothing has to happen. It just has to be the threat of snow and ice. And all of a sudden you go to Walmart and they're packed out all the way to the end, and there's no bread, there's no milk, and you're frustrated. All you see is all these irritating people because you didn't come here for milk and bread. You came to do your regular grocery shopping. But all these other people, you know, not you, but all these other people are idiots in your way. Okay, we're just talking real. Okay. And so sometimes it's hard to see past the crowds. Sometimes it's hard. When you see a mass of people you don't know, maybe you don't even like them, and it's hard to get past that. You may find it hard to believe, but my staff knows this. We've talked about this before, but I'm actually a little bit of an introvert. I know, I'm not saying I'm shy. That's not what I mean. But there's a definition where it talks about introverts and extroverts, and introverts like to pull away to recharge, where extroverts like to be around other people to recharge. If you remember Pastor Steve Miller, when he was here, our children's pastor, he was definitely an extrovert. So we would have a full day at a softball tournament for raising money for BGMC, and we would be tired, ready to go home, be by ourselves. And he goes, y'all want to go to the church and play volleyball? No. No, Steve, I don't. I want to go home. I want to go rest. But for him, he wanted to be around other people to recharge. Me, I wanted to pull away. And so I find myself many times, especially after we've been busy at the church, I want to be alone. And nothing used to ruin my day off from the church than when my kids would have a day off. Because they are needy. They want things. I'm hungry. So am I. Fix me something. But that's not what they meant. What they meant is, I'm hungry. What are you going to do about it? You know, are you going to go buy something? Are you going to fix something? I mean, you're just sitting there. Well, I'm about to go do something in the yard now because I don't want to be around you. But anyway, so I have a habit, but I find I'm in good company because Jesus was known to be in crowds of people many a time. And what did he do? He was pulling away from the crowd. He'd be ministering on the beach. He had that beach ministry and all the crowd would show up. And he was like, look, guys, I love you guys, but you 12, why don't y'all go to the other side? I'm going to go be by myself for a little bit. And then, you know, we know one of those occasions he actually came in the middle of a storm to bail him out in the middle of the night. But Jesus was constantly pulling away from the crowd whenever he had, after a big event, to recharge. But one thing that we understand about Jesus is that he was so good that he loved people. Jesus didn't pull away, even though it might have been a moment where he was tired, exhausted, and he needed a chance to rest. He was always looking through the crowd at people. We tend to respond to the crowds with frustration and coldness, and sometimes even with anger and contempt when it's not what we want to be around. Okay, we're going to get scripture in a minute to back all this up, but I want you to follow me. I want you to understand that sometimes when you go to work and you're going through all the situations, you're hanging around all these problems, you're dealing with all these situations, all we tend to see it many times is a bunch of frustration and a lot of contempt for all the people that are hindering us from what we want to do. It's a hard issue, but Jesus looked through the crowd many times and he saw people differently. Jesus was better than all of us because, you know, he was so good. In the middle of being exhausted and tired and frustrated, he would walk slowly through the crowd. And in the middle of walking slowly through the crowd, he would find a need and he would stop and meet it. Whenever I stop to talk to people, my family thinks that I'm just delaying them getting home. And so they are ready to rush and say, we're just going to leave him. We'll come back for you later. You know, and they just leave. But it is. Jesus was so good about walking slowly. So Jesus displayed certain convictions that we need to develop in our own lives when it comes to showing compassion when there's a tendency to show frustration. And so let me give you four rock-solid convictions that create a heart of compassion. And so we're going to start in Matthew chapter 9 and begin in verse 35. And he says this, Jesus traveled through all the towns and the villages of that area, teaching in the synagogues and announcing the good news about the kingdom. And he healed every kind of disease and illness. So here he is. He was healing everywhere he went. He would walk through. He would heal all these diseases. He would heal all these situations. He would be there, take care of people. And then verse 36, just in the first few words, it says, when Jesus saw the crowds... Here's the first thing. Jesus always saw the crowds. Crowds are full of people. Jesus saw past the group and saw the people. Jesus was always good at seeing in. Seems obvious that crowds are full of people, but many times all we see is people. Go to Walmart, look how crowded Walmart is. We go to Branson. Boy, Branson sure was full of a lot of people. You know, it was crowded. It was so crowded everywhere. Went to $7 City today. They ruined it. All I wanted to do is go and have a good time with my family, but you had to walk like this. Couldn't even see the Christmas parade because of all the idiots in front of me. Which all the people behind you were calling you that. But that's what we do. We do not like crowds. In fact, you know, even We like to be where we want to be. I heard someone say this, the only person who likes a crowded movie theater is the manager. You know? Same thing in church. We pastors love crowded churches. I can see we're not crowded tonight because it's, you know, obviously it's Wednesday and it's spring break. But pastors love crowded churches. People don't. People want to choose their seat. They want to have space around them. They want to have room for their family. And they want not to be so close to everybody else. And I know that's true because the way you guys space out in here. We've talked about it, so don't be surprised if one day, including next week, we show up and there's ropes off of the back so y'all have to sit closer to me so that it stops feeling like you guys are just drifted so far in the back, you know? So if we rope off the back few pews, just know I want to see you. I want to be able to see the whites of your eyes on Wednesday nights. But here it is. It seems awful, but Jesus saw people. The Gospels are filled with stories where Jesus walks into a crowd and immediately stops and heals somebody. He walks in the crowd and pulls over and sees a lame man. Jesus was so full of compassion that everywhere he walked away, he moved past the idea that I got to get somewhere to I've got to meet somebody. And it's frustrating. As a pastor, I'll come off the platform, and you know what the first thing as a pastor I want to do on every Sunday? I want to get to the back door. Why do I want to get back door? I want to greet all the visitors. I want to let them know I was glad they were here, and I want to invite them to come back again. Do you know how far I get? Right here. And you know what I remind myself? Sometimes what I'm meeting up here is more important than meeting back there because we always talk to our staff about this. Always walk slowly through the crowd. You never know the moment you're going to be stopped, and it's the same. I was walking to the back, and I was about to run to the back one time and because we had so many visitors, and I was going to try to get to the back, and I was trying to meet with everybody, and I got right about here, and someone was crying, and the Lord just said, you need to talk to them. I was like, oh, but they're leaving, Lord. But I did, and you know what happened? Someone was going through a very, very serious situation right there, and so we got a chance to stop and pray, and Sandra and I prayed with them. You never know what's going to go on. Walking slowly through the crowd, and the tendency is we all do this. We all have, I got to get to A to B. I've got to get to the store. I've got to get to this. I've got to get this. I want to pick up the kids, get home. I've got to do this, this, this. But how many times, if we would just slow down? What if we're at work? The goal is to get out to the car. But how many times are we walking to leave and all of a sudden you see somebody? And maybe God's prompted your heart to talk to somebody, to see past the group of people trying to clock out at 5 that maybe you need to stop, walk a little slower, and meet with somebody. We all have these moments, but we become to get frustrated. If we've ever had a moment, and we all have it. Don't raise your hand. Don't even acknowledge what I'm saying. This is a rhetorical question. How many have that one person that just likes to talk all the time and won't let you go? They are a talker. When they call, you're like, oh, no. Because you know that's a 45-minute to a 2-hour phone call. When they see you at work and you're about to walk in the door, you know if they catch you and you put your head up and they're calling for you, you know if you lift it up, you know if you acknowledge them, you're going to be late for dinner. But so many times, all we see is the frustration when we show contempt for those people, when really those are the people that God put us on this earth and in that place at that moment to meet. So many times we're irritated at the same people that God called us to minister to. You guys are on a mission field every time you go to work. You're in a mission field every time you walk into the store, into a restaurant, and no matter where you are on a mission field. And if we would stop being frustrated and stop long enough to say, hey, what's going on? Can I pray with you? You would be surprised the difference. Our church has been very fortunate. We're very blessed. We are. We have a good group here that shows up every week. We have a good group every Sunday morning that shows up. But you know what we don't see? Like we want to see? We see it, but we don't see it like we want to see it. True salvations. We see a lot of transfer, people who came from one church to another church. And that's kind of where we're at right now. But do you know what makes a difference? It's when people stop to find out people's story long enough to hear what's going on in their life. That's when they begin to have conversations that are real conversations, that people begin to open up, and they really begin to know about Jesus. See, there's a different thought here. People used to go to work or go out into the world, and they would talk to people about Jesus. They would pray for the sick on the street, at the job, at the corner market, at the tent shop. They would see miracles being done. They would see people come and say, I want to follow this Jesus. They would baptize them out in the community. Then they would come back to the body of believers, the church, to the building, to the temple, and they would tell everybody about what Jesus was doing outside. Now, we come to church, we worship, we have these great experiences in this building, and then we go out and tell a world who know nothing about Jesus about everything that Jesus is doing in here. We've turned it upside down. But what would happen if we could go to the world and say, listen, let me tell you about a man who has changed my world upside down. And I realize it's difficult right now, and I know you're frustrated right now, but we took time to see past the crowd and past the irritations, and we saw people. What's going to make the difference to this generation is when we begin to see people and begin to love them right where they are and not where they aren't. I love the group that was there every Thursday night while we were being a warming station. We loved on people right where they were. We went, we talked to them. When they weren't showing up, we stopped by. We would drive behind House of Hope to pick up the homeless so we could come and talk to them. We had real open conversations, and we loved on people. We had a great prayer time. We prayed with people. Why? Because we went to where people were. We didn't just say, look, we have a great show. Come see it. We said, we have a real relationship with a real Savior. Let me go tell you about him. See, we get the idea, and I realize that we want a church that it sounds great. We want the best musicians, and we want wonderful worship, and we want the lights to be right, and that's all great, and it's all gravy. It all makes it easier for us to focus because we're a very entertainment-driven culture. But this is not where it's at. This is where it ends. It starts out there. The people that need Jesus the most are out there. Okay. It goes on. So verse 36 starts out. It says, when he saw the crowds, he did what? He had compassion on them. Jesus was moved with compassion, and he had compassion. When he saw the people out there and saw what was going on, he stopped and told, listen, I know we're trying to get to Jerusalem. Hey, I know we're trying to get over here to this city. I know we're trying to do this, but we got to stop. In fact, a matter of fact, we got a detour. I need to go to Samaria today. Why? I just got to go to Samaria. So he would go in out of his way to stop because he had compassion. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. What's the number two? Everybody matters. Our very first core value is every soul matters to God. Every soul matters to God. Those that are great, those that are dirty, those that are clean, those that are poor, those that are doctors and lawyers, and those who don't have a job at all. Those who are in need of benevolence and those who can give benevolence. Every soul matters to God. Everybody matters to God. So when we're so busy, and busyness is the death of ministry. We're so busy trying to get from point A to point B that we don't have compassion on anybody because we don't care about anybody because what we really care about is just getting our task list done. And I'm an organized person. I have a task list. Let me tell you, I have a calendar I stick by. I have my reminders list. I'm checking them off. Makes me feel good to hit that little dot and watch it wipe away off my screen. Love it. But sometimes we fill our calendar and our time spaces up so much that we don't pause long enough to see what's going on in that moment. I'll never forget Joshua at a restaurant when it was Dixie Cafe. We were sitting there one late last night. And he goes, Dad, that older gentleman is over there eating by himself. And I said, yeah. And he said, huh, he gets up. I don't think he asked us. He just got up, said, where's Josh? He's over there talking to this older gentleman because he didn't like the idea that he was sitting by himself. You know, I just think with that childlike innocence at that time, I think how much more compassionate should we as followers of Christ be to realize that everybody matters to God. Everybody. our neighbor, we all have those people. And so many times when my phone rings, it's over there, and I get a lot of phone calls, I get a lot of text messages, I have to literally put my phone in another room so I can talk to Sandra sometimes. It can blow up sometimes. But you know what I can't be? I can't get so full of myself that I'm too busy to pick up the phone, because you never know what's going to happen on the other line. Help us all, Lord. All people are created in God's image. Everyone you meet today is an image bearer of God. So we live in a culture that has dehumanized humans. We've objectified people. We've classified people. We need to rehumanize them. We need to understand that everyone bears the image of the Creator, and that Jesus died for anyone willing to trust him. Jesus is willing. Listen, Jesus wants to touch and heal everyone. There's a verse in 2 Timothy that says he's not willing that any should perish. So why should we? In fact, I'm not speaking here because I'm a saint, but I'll tell you, one of my greatest frustrations is when I'm in a hurry is for someone to pull out randomly in front of me in the fast lane and slow down. Oh, I got some people ready to testify in here. Because obviously they're not in a hurry, and obviously they didn't recognize what lane they were in. Because there's another one just to the right for all those people that go at a different kind of speed. And sometimes the Lord has to remind me that, Brian, sometimes I'm trying to protect you from what lies ahead. I can't tell you how many times, nor do I want to admit all my flaws, because I'm not picking on you either. How many times I've got behind that situation and just on the other heel there was an officer ready to catch me. And I'm like, thank you, Lord. I didn't feel like it was his mercy in the moment. But how much of it would have been serious? What if there would have been an accident, a wreck? Because you know what? The church would have lost a pastor. My wife would have lost a husband. My kids would have lost a father. How tragic would that have been? All because I was in a hurry. So slowing down, realizing there's other things greater at place, and realizing, Lord, what do you have for me today? I always am amazed that a Muslim culture who we don't believe serves a real God is more yielded to the idea that as Allah wills it, it will happen. And we as believers think, if God doesn't meet my three wishes, then he must just be whatever. They adjust themselves because it says Allah will it. We think God's a genie. When he doesn't meet our three magic wishes, well, then I just can't believe he would be that way. Why would God do that? Why would God mistreat me so? In fact, how many times you've been stopped by somebody and said, Lord, no. And the Lord's saying, this is what I have you here for. I know. Woe is me, right? I thought we were going to talk about feelings and emotions. We are. We're dealing with your frustrations right now. We all have this moment of contempt when we get stopped, but what if we would not be contempt, but we would have compassion? Moving our attitude from contempt to compassion, from frustration to understanding. It goes on to the last part of that verse, and it says, he was moved with compassion on them because they were confused and helpless. See, that's the problem with all those other people. They're confused and they're helpless and they need you like a sheep without a shepherd. They are like a sheep without a shepherd. Everyone has a story, even you. They're confused. They have a story. And what would happen when you just sat down and said, tell me a little bit about yourself? Where were you brought up? Where? Tell me about your story. Where did you grow up? Did you have church background? You know, you ask questions. You ask open-ended questions, and you find out, because everybody has a story. And you know what I have found? The more I talk to people in our church, there are some amazing people in here, and many of them have amazing testimonies, and I can't wait till you get to hear them. In fact, if you are a woman in this place, my wife, who is leading the women's ministry on the 25th of March, is going to have a lady by the name of Laura Dove come tell a testimony. It is outstanding. It will just blow your mind about someone you see every week that is so sweet, so loving, has done so many things. Her husband has helped lead worship for us, and here she is. She has this outstanding testimony, and all you got to do is show up and have a few conversations. There are people like that every day that are such a need. There is a world of hurt out there, and you are the answer that he created for it. We are good at hiding our stories because we don't want people to know. Do you know there's something about being vulnerable and telling people your story too? People are led in strengths, but they connect in weakness. We follow Jesus, and we understand being led by Jesus because he did these miracles. He raised the dead. He healed the sick. He did all these things, the blind, and all this stuff happened. It was just incredible, and we're like, wow, I can never do that. But when Jesus was being whipped and flogged and hung on a cross, we connect with pain because we all know what pain feels like. People connect with weakness. They connect with the suffering. And when you begin to tell your story and some of the things you've been through, you'd never know who it's going to connect with. And we're so good at ignoring the stories of others. But everyone has a story, and every story is important. Mr. Rogers said this. There's a quote that he said, Fred Rogers. It says, "Frankly, there isn't anyone you couldn't learn to love once you've heard their story. Never underestimate the impact that your mere existence can have on another human being. There is something of your there is something of yourself that you leave at every meeting with another person." There is something. Sharing your story and listening to other stories creates a vulnerability, and vulnerability paves the way for trust, for intimacy, and for relationship. Vulnerability paves the way for trust, for intimacy, and for relationship. When you become vulnerable with someone else and begin to share your story with someone else, all of a sudden it paves the way for you to have real connection and real conversations. In fact, in any relationship, marriage, dating, whatever you're doing, no relationship becomes real until you become vulnerable. Then he goes on, Matthew chapter 9, verse 37 through 38. And he says, he said to his disciples, "The harvest is great, but the workers are few." They're out at the lake camping all summer long, and they're not working. They're busy with their other lives and their jobs, and they're doing all this other stuff with their family, and they're legitimately busy, but they're too busy to take care of the harvest. So, because they're not going to do it, pray to the Lord of the harvest and ask him to send more workers into the fields. What does this mean for us? Lord, you know I don't have the time, and I'm way busier than everybody else in here. So, Lord, I pray that you say that somebody would go help Miss Nicole and help teach that class. And I pray that somebody would help Pastor Brian greet people on Sunday mornings, because, Lord, you know I can't get those kids ready in time, and I'm so busy. And, you know, I realize other people are busy, but, Lord, you know how busy I really am. Let me just tell you, number four, real compassion shows up as service. Real compassion. When you have compassion, you'll show up and you'll work. You'll do something. Real compassion shows action. A lot of people, and again, I'm not here. This is not my guilt session. I promise you, this is my guilt session. But a lot of people have a heart to reach our homeless community. Very few people want to show up every Thursday night and dedicate time for it. I get that. And maybe that's not your calling. I get it. But everybody is called to do something. When you're moved enough with compassion, you'll move out of your seat into action. And for us to reach the generation in 2019 and 2020 and beyond is going to have to be a generation that has more than just an ah moment, like ah, to an aha moment where they begin to move to action. We have a generation. Do you know what they call the Generation Z? We got the millennials, my daughter Madison, and a lot of those Generation Z. They're calling them the non-generation. Because when you talk about belief, they have a non-belief in anything. They don't really, there's just a non-generation. That's just a non-belief generation. So they don't have a lot of beliefs and convictions about other things. So how do you reach that? People have got to do more than just saying, oh my goodness, how horrible this is. We've got to be moved to action to get people to do something, reach, have conversations, talk to people, and help them understand their need. So compassion doesn't just see suffering and pain. Compassion acts. To see pain and suffering in the world and do nothing about it may just it may just demonstration the great coldness of all. So here it is. When we don't move and we see the pain and suffering, we don't do anything, it may, instead of the Great Commission, it may be the great coldness of our generation. Jesus didn't just model choosing compassion. He didn't just touch people and serve them. He also commissioned other followers to do the same. So he continues, and so after he finishes in verse 38, he picks up in chapter 10 in verses 1, and it goes on. It says, Jesus called the 12 disciples together and gave them the authority to do what? Cast out evil spirits, heal every kind of disease and illness. And then he goes on and he talks about the disciples, and there's the list of the disciples there. So jump to 7, verse 7. It says, go and announce to them that the kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cure those with leprosy, cast out demons, give as freely as you have received. Here's what he's saying. I'm getting ready to close, so let me just say this. Here's what he's saying. You have received healing. You have received deliverance. You have been set free from drugs, alcohol, sin, all these things. You've been given freely. What are you doing with what you've been given? Now, turn around, do the same for others. And if we're not doing the same that God, Christ, Jesus paid the price, that someone prayed for us and led us through and did those things for us, then what are we doing with our actions? What are we doing? We've got to put it back into action and do it for other people. This is what we've been called to do. So what are you doing? See, here's the deal. Today, Jesus still is choosing, calling, commissioning, equipping, empowering people to go and show compassion and love, to heal, to preach, and to teach, and to minister, and to serve. He's still doing all these things. So go and be a part of someone's story this week and do the same. Every one of us have a story. You're here. No one came here by accident. You're here. Someone invited you. Someone prayed for you. Someone taught you. Someone led you. Some of you, whether you were in ranger class, whether you were in girls ministry class, whether you were in youth group, whether you were later on in life saved, everyone in here, you're here and you're a part because some grandmother, some person, some teacher, some person discipling, some random person on the side of the street called and came and talked to you. Someone showed up at your house and said, I've got something good news to share with you. You're here because someone impacted your life and cared enough about your story to stop by and talk to you. So what are we to do? The same. The greatest fear of my life as a pastor is that we will become so self-consumed that we will no longer reach the lost. Because I don't want us to grow because another church failed. I want us to grow because we are successful in reaching and doing the Great Commission. The Great Commission is not go to your friends who are going to another body of churches and tell them all about what's going great at your church. The Great Commission is not go and say, listen, I know you like that church over there, but you ought to check out what's going on in our church. The Great Commission is not all these other things we tend to make it about. The Great Commission is go into all the world, wherever that may be, and share Christ.